Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Anne Louise Bardak, who is a Penn USA award-winning journalist and author of Cuba Confidential and Without Fidel, A Death Foretold in Miami, Havana, and Washington, as well as the editor of The Prison Letters of Fidel Castro. She's also a contributor to Politico, where she's profiled Senator Marco Rubio. Welcome to Background Briefing, Anne Louise Bardak.
Thank you.
And it turns out that little Marco, who was derided by candidate Trump, during the elections, is now working hand in glove with Trump. He's been in a number of White House meetings. He and the wives have had dinner alone in the White House. And now we're speaking on Thursday, of course. On Friday, tomorrow, Trump flies down to Miami, where he's expected to undo the trade and travel deals done by Obama, which strikes me again as this obsession that Trump has. He just has to undo everything and anything that Obama did.
Well, that's a good point. But I think that there's another point that's more salient in tomorrow's press conference, which, fittingly enough, was going to be held at the Manuel Artime Theater in Little Havana, it's 1:30 Eastern time. But the way I view this is it speaks to the transactional nature of both men. So here's Marco Rubio, who was a fierce foe of President Donald Trump. I mean, fierce. He started that small-handed Trump routine that seems to have stuck. And again, as you pointed out, little Marco, they couldn't have insulted each other anymore. But once the election was decided, Marco, right at the beginning last November, decided that he was going to do business on Cuba, that if Donald Trump wanted his vote on anything, he was going to have to start the rollback. Now, in all fairness, Marco Rubio and Representative Mario Diaz-Balart have been fierce critics of the Obama deal from day one. But they are in a minority because the polls today overwhelmingly show support for the opening among all Americans, but very high polling among Cuban Americans in Florida. It's going to be a little bit of careful what you pray for. And some of the items they're going to chip away on are going to directly cause some issues in conflict with the business interests that Donald Trump so assiduously courts. And it's also going to cause some Miami, South Florida unemployment.
Well, of course, Diaz-Balart, the congressman, his aunt was Fidel Castro's first wife.
That's right.
And his cousin has the diminutive nickname of Fidelito. So the animus there is long, bitter, well-established. But didn't Rubio and Diaz-Balart meet with Trump to anticipate the objections to it and to figure out ways to get around the fact that it's popular, even right in that Cuban-American constituency down there in Miami, not to mention across the country? I believe it's something like 60 to 70% popular with the American people.
The numbers are very high across the boards. And more to the point is when the deal was made by Obama, Trump actually said fine. He was all for it. Now, you have to remember in 1998, when there was a very strict U.S. embargo, Donald Trump sent emissaries to Cuba to stake out potential possibilities for the Trump empire to branch out into Cuba. So he's always had his eye on Cuba as a great resort destination for his own businesses. So... And it was in a direct violation of the U.S. embargo at that time. So there's a lot of very rich ironies here. The other irony that I particularly relish is that this may be the first time that Donald Trump goes in conflict with Vladimir Putin. Putin has regained his foothold since Fidel's death, or entrenched it even further under Raul Castro in Cuba. They reopened the listening post Lourdes. That's what it's called, Lourdes. It's that big, ugly behemoth in Havana, in Miramar. And that listening post gives a lot of capability to listen in and eavesdrop, particularly in the southern part of the United States. Russia also has extensive interests in Cuba on trade, all kinds of issues. Putin was regarded as a loyal and trusted friend by both Fidel Castro and Raul Castro. So this may be ironic and historic because it may be the first time Donald Trump does anything that's going to meet with the disapproval of Vladimir Putin. But again, inadvertently, it means that Putin gets to play a larger role. So as the U.S. sits on American companies and tells them now, which is what's expected, you can't do business with Cuba if you go through the Cuban military. Well, that's a big ask, because the Cuban military, through its economic arm, GAESA, runs just about everything in Cuban tourism. I mean, once you look under the small lettering, all these little tourist companies, they all are tributaries of the big behemoth of GAESA. So we're going to see an interesting game here of which companies are more directly tied to the Cuban military. But this is going to have unintended consequences, you know, for the airline industry, for, of course, for Trump's competitors, the hotels. But guess who's going to pick up the slack? The Russians, the Chinese. So there's a lot of unintended consequences here. And by the way, the deal has not gone down well to date in Miami. Fabiola Santiago, who is hardly a left-winger, wrote a scathing column in the Miami Herald after Rubio appeared at the Comey intelligence hearing, attacking him for trading Cuba policy, Cuban-American rights, in order to savage Comey at the behest of Donald Trump. And so in Miami, in South Florida, this deal is seen as completely transactional. Marco Rubio gets to go to the White House. The wives wine and dine together. He has to just beat up a little bit on Comey, and probably next is Mueller, and he gets this little laundry list. Now he's joining up with Ivanka Trump in order to promote family leave. So Marco Rubio, the great never-Trumper, who, you know, most successfully derided Donald Trump, is now in the bosom of the Trump family.
And again, I'm speaking with Ann Louise Bardak, who's a Penn USA award-winning journalist and author of Cuba Confidential and Without Fidel, A Death Foretold in Miami, Havana, and Washington, as well as the editor of the Prison Letters of Fidel Castro. Well, not only, of course, is Marco Rubio selling out in the sense that he's, as you just pointed out, he's attacking Comey on behalf of Trump in order to get his way on undoing the progress that Barack Obama made with Cuba. But the same is true, of course, of Diaz-Balart as well. He apparently basically traded his vote on Obamacare, to repeal and replace Obamacare, in order to get Trump's support to reimpose the embargo on travel and trade. So let's talk about the specifics of travel and trade. What are they going to do? What kind of damage are they going to do tomorrow?
They're going to make a big, broad statement. They've codenamed this whole thing MARTY, meaning English for Marti, so no one would know they've been negotiating this since February. They are going to make a big speech about human rights. Donald Trump will talk about elections and human rights, you know, issues that, you know, eluded him completely when he was in Saudi Arabia, but, you know, which are now of great importance. And by the way, it's an important issue. There are serious human rights issues in Cuba. There are serious issues about the fact there hasn't been an election in 60 years. But he's going to alight upon that. And then from there, he's going to say they're going to do some rollbacks. And he's going to tie everything to the monies going into the coffers of the Cuban military. And like I told you, they'll start itemizing who and what and how. But this is going to be a big dog and pony show tomorrow, and I predict with very little follow-up. Because, as I just said, once you look at all these travel and tourist and hotel deals, almost all of them end up with a piece ending up in this company, GAYESA, which is the Cuban armies, the what's called the FAR, the armed forces of Cuba, are called the FAR, and their company, GAYESA, they are the Uber company. You have to think of this company as the CEO of Cuba. And the idea that they're going to pick this one and not that one, it's going to be very problematic. And companies like Carnival, how much money does Carnival give to Rubio in Florida and to Trump, Mickey Aronson, and who now has a lively business with Cuba? How do you think this is going to sit there? All these behemoths that, of companies that are now richly, just richly enhanced by Open Cuba, all these American Airlines, United Airlines, Delta Airlines, Virgin, all are in Cuba or pending approvals, etc. I mean, these are big companies for Donald Trump to say, look, Saudi Arabia is okay, but Cuban human rights we're worried about.
But what about the trade in agriculture, for example? A lot of Midwestern senators support the opening.
That's absolutely true, and that has always been the case. And I predict he's not going to mess with the agriculture because Iowa, Nebraska, even Arizona, and this is not a popular position among the Republican Party, which is the party of business, the party of enterprise, the party of commerce. So Jeff Flake, Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, is ardently against this rollback.
So when you mentioned
you
mentioned earlier, though, Anne-Louise Baddeck, about the idea of that this is all be done under the rubric of human rights, et cetera, which Trump
and elections,
and Trump didn't give a damn about him in Saudi Arabia, clearly, and he's made no indication that he cares at all about human rights. He's totally transactional, and he reaches out to despicable, murderous dictators like the Filipino fellow and the Turkish dictator. And and trashes allies at the same time. So, but as far as I can tell, the embargo, whether it's increased or decreased, has never had any correlation to improvements in human rights in Cuba. And in fact, in 2003, there was a crackdown by the Cuban government. They rounded up 75 human rights activists and independent journalists and sentenced them to an average of 20 years in prison. So it just doesn't have any correlation, does it? I mean, there's no way in the world that you improve. I mean, obviously there should be an improvement, and nobody's justifying what the
right.
Cubans have done. But on the other hand, the embargo has no relationship to whether or not you can pressure them on human rights.
Well, you know, what happened in the 1990s is Jorge Mascanosa, the once controversial exiled titan, sort of the other king of Cuba, you know, in Miami, he convinced Bill Clinton to codify the embargo. Otherwise, it would not be, because Obama just would have written it away. So you now have a problem where you need congressional approval. So what's going to happen here is that Trump he's made a very successful deal for himself. He's going to get Rubio on intelligence to look dumbfounded about any of the charges by special counsel Robert Mueller, or be outraged about James Comey, both of whom are longtime conservative Republicans and then some. But they will you'll see the rhetoric, and Rubio will do his part. And Mario Diaz-Balart, unlike his more principled counterpart, Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, will back this very shabby health care.
Well, Anne-Louise Bardek, I appreciate you joining us here today. I dread what's happening tomorrow, but this is a president who has some bitter hatred towards his predecessor that's always been irrational and frankly racist and ugly, and he's going to continue to trash the legacy of Obama, I fear.
But there's this other factor. It's transactional.
Sure,
more
I understand.
Than,
yeah, no.
Is that he needs something from Marco Rubio on these committees.
Right.
He needs him to kind of diss the Russia connection.
Right.
And he needs Mario to on the domestic health care issues among them.
Sure. Well, again, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Okay. Take care.
You too. And again, I've been speaking with Anne-Louise Bardek, who is a Penn USA award-winning journalist and author of Cuba Confidential and Without Fidel, A Death Foretold in Miami, Havana, and Washington, as well as the editor of the Prison Letters of Fidel Castro. We're going to take a brief station break and back look into the possibility that it could be a do-over of the Trump election and Brexit.